Welcome to Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Darko Hrelik to the broadcast. Darko is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer of Gartner. In his current role, Darko leads the Strategic Technology Group, ensuring Gartner fully leverages the capabilities of technology to deliver value to clients and aligning IT's activities to the long-term growth objectives of the organization. Darko joined Gartner from Automatic Data Processing, where he most recently led all aspects of ADP's technical strategy, architecture, and technology as Vice President and Chief Technology Officer of Employer Services. He played an instrumental role in driving the service-oriented architecture, vision, and strategy at ADP. Prior to joining ADP, Darko spent over 20 years at IBM, most of which were at the renowned T.J. Watson Research Center, working in areas such as video text, high-speed communications, and electronic commerce. He also helped form the IBM Internet Division in the mid-90s, where he spearheaded the technical strategy for what is now known as e-business. In 2000, Darko helped found e2open.com, a high-tech industry electronic marketplace consortium startup. Darko holds a master's degree in computer science from Stevens Institute of Technology. I recently caught up with Darko during a layover between flights at Ronald Reagan National Airport in Washington. Given Darko's post at Gartner and his access to CIOs from across the globe, I wondered what trends he saw emerging in IT. Our conversation covered world-class IT principle 1, people, as we discussed the so-called war for talent, 2, infrastructure, as we discussed service-oriented architecture, 3, project and portfolio management, as we discussed agile development methods, 4, IT and business partnerships, as we focused on the need for better business alignment among IT departments, as well as a variety of other topics. Darko Hrelik, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great. Darko, in your current role as SVP and CIO of Gartner, I know you've got access, obviously, to a lot of research, and I know you generally have a lot of reason to speak with CIOs and technology executives at a wide range of companies. What do you see as the, say, top three items that are rising to the top of CIOs' agendas?
A number of different areas, but I would suggest that one of the key challenges for all IT organizations and CIOs lies in the area of business alignment, where CIOs need to make sure that the organization is aligned with business needs and the direction that they need to go in is consistent with where the business needs are going to be in the future. I think it's actually a key to IT survival in the future to make sure that that happens. If it doesn't, then IT, you know, will probably little by little become irrelevant. So it's a very necessary self-preservation move for IT, while at the same time obviously providing business value. So it's a natural thing. Second area I believe is in the relationship management arena, where CIOs need to be more aligned with the needs of the business to manage relationship with their clients better and more closer, so that the company has a complete 360 degree view of customers and vice versa, and the anticipation of need is there before the customers sometimes even recognize it. It's, you know, obviously, you know, nothing new, but I think the differentiator of future may very well be in the area of how well a relationship is managed, now how much better your product is versus your competition. And the third area is somewhat related, and it maybe overlaps the others, is the overall agility and flexibility that the IT organization, technology, business processes and in general meet the needs of the business as you know, time goes on. It's going to be extremely important. It is extremely important today that IT is able to react quickly and as relevantly as possible. And that is only possible if, you know, agility sort of built in from day one rather than added as an afterthought, both architecturally, technically, business process management, you know, business processes in general.
To that point, Darko, I know that you've had a lot of experience in a variety of your the companies with which you've worked in helping them develop a more agile means of developing products, developing services, developing technologies, and incorporated service-oriented architecture and a variety of different processes and means by which the organization can deliver its products more quickly. What sort of advice would you offer to organizations who are at the beginning of a journey in the development of a more agile, nimble, perhaps even service-oriented architecture means of developing?
First is to recognize that agility is critical to survival of the organization. Things are changing at even a faster pace than they have in the past, and the business is going to and is expecting to get their needs met, immediately. It's always a tomorrow type thing. And so the only way that can happen is if things are built and architected rather than, sort of just evolved into. I think the simplest way to go about it is to think, from a service orientation perspective and recognize that, the business needs are vast and many, many service needs are there. Go through those to determine which are more necessary or maybe competitively more important for the business, and try to solve them as well as you possibly can. So rather than thinking of solving huge, galactic problems, find smaller needs that provide as much value as you can, and done in a quick way. But the accumulation of all of these things will end up solving a big problem for the business at the end.
There's no mystery, of course, that we're now in the midst of a downturn in the economy. And oftentimes, one of the typical areas that organizations like to cut is IT. I'm curious, one of the things that you mentioned, obviously, is that the first priority for CIOs that you see is alignment with the business as a means by which it can make sure that it's focusing its investments in the right area and so forth. I'm wondering, first of all, what you've seen in terms of how organizations have thought about cutting costs, whether there are any similarities even to past downturns, say, like the one earlier this decade, and what lessons there might be for organizations who are thinking about planning for the period when the economy rises again.
I haven't seen the typical downturn type IT cost cutting going on. Obviously IT should be a good corporate citizen and make sure that it's run as efficiently as possible and as effectively as possible, and always manage the cost down as much as possible. Personally, I think that's a responsibility, whether it's good times or bad times. I think being inefficient should never really be okay. So from that perspective, I think it's almost business as usual. Obviously manage costs down and make sure that every dollar available is used as strategically as possible. At the same time, I think these are the times when companies should, in fact, be thinking about what will the business need once the economy starts turning around and the company starts growing again. If IT waits till then to start reacting, then by definition, it's probably going to be too late already. And so now is really the time to start investing for that turnaround and then be ready with the business to start growing the business again.
I know that you've been spending a lot of time on planes. In fact, we're meeting right now during the course of a layover for you here at Reagan National Airport in Washington. And a lot of your flights have been to international locations, as Gartner's been pushing internationally and developing a lot in other geographies. I wonder if you can provide some thoughts on what you've seen as differences between the different areas, Asia, Europe, the Americas, and different places that you've traveled to and where Gartner has done business. And any sort of differences in terms of the trends you see from an IT perspective?
It is different in different geographies across the globe. Asia is booming for the most part. That area is experiencing really tremendous economic growth, and as a result, IT's challenges there are about keeping up with the business growth. And it's one of those, I suppose, good problems to have that every CIO loves to have, but. Nevertheless, it is a challenge that IT must meet. Europe, is always cautionary whenever there are potential issues in the U.S., and so things are a little bit more of a cautious nature there. Not the economies are doing well, but again, you know, the belief is that there are too many close connections between U.S. economy and the European economy. As a result, if things don't go well in the U.S., it's not too long before things don't go well in Europe as well. So businesses are a bit cautious, you know, there. But one of the things that is sort of similar across all of the geographical areas that I've noticed is just the overall, you know, problem of finding the skills and the resources that IT needs to, you know, to meet the challenges of tomorrow. And in fact, more than to meet the challenges of tomorrow, to also meet the challenges of yesterday. People are retiring in IT, and so you know, the next generation doesn't know them or understand them, and it's not a, you know, in many cases just not an option to be able to replace that very quickly. Yeah, obviously, I'm sure every CIO would love to get rid of legacy as quickly as possible, but as you need to sort of, you know, obtain new skills and resources to meet the challenges of tomorrow, you know, you also got to bring along the past for a certain amount of time, and so challenges are being, you know, hitting CIOs on both ends of the spectrum, and that seems to be global, from what I can tell, and so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I know in the past, Darko, you've spoken about the different generational differences in the use of technology, and how Gartner has handled the challenge of making sure that it's delivering its services, its products, not only to its traditional client set, but almost anticipating the way in which information is going to be consumed by the next generation. Can you talk a little bit about the challenge of thinking through how that might be done?
It's really an interesting phenomenon over the last decade or so, as the next generation of workers come into the workforce, they essentially anticipate working in the same way that they did, you know, when they were in school and when they were kids, and you know, the whole Web 2.0 phenomenon on, you know, much more granular communication and much more real time, you know, and you know, the era of email is becoming legacy to them. You know, everything is happening, you know, is in text messages and in very small pieces of content that are very relevant. A 50-page document, you know, where the answer that you're looking for is someplace in there, they just won't go through it. I mean, just, you know, it's not acceptable. And so it's very important that knowledge is managed, is captured and managed and delivered in a manner that end users such as those are expecting as we move into the future. So it's a really, you know, interesting phenomenon that's going on as we speak. And, you know, certainly at Gartner, you know, we experience it in a huge way. And, you know, it's extremely interesting and fun, but it is also, you know, fun to see, you know, how it all ends up playing itself out. Mm-hmm.
I know, Darko, not only in your role at Gartner, but also in your past past lives at ADP, and especially in your time in at IBM, where you had a role very explicitly related to innovation within the T.J. Watson Research Center. You have worked within environments where innovation was, in fact, the key role that you were playing, the key of the organization that you were part of. I wonder if you could speak to the differences between the way in which organizations like the Watson Research Center, which are tasked with innovation, how they differ with the sort of organic innovation that must be happening day to day within the business units of an organization as well.
Yeah, once upon a time, there used to be the luxury of innovating for the, you know, sake of innovating. Mm-hmm. And I think those days are over. And I think those days are over probably even, you know, in most cases where innovation, you know, was sort of the only job and wasn't necessarily connected to, you know, specific business needs. I think in general, you know, not just, you know, in sort of regular business environments, but also research labs and the like, it still comes down to, you know, need-driven innovation. And so it's critical that, you know, anyone that's looking to innovate really steps back and analyzes, what are the needs of the business? What are the key things to business survival and where they can differentiate as they move forward, and then innovate around that, innovate to excel in meeting those needs. And I think, you know, that's critical as any IT organization moves forward, or any research, in fact, moves forward. So, I really don't believe that even, you know, pure research organizations can innovate for the sake of innovating anymore.
I know that Gartner has made a great name for itself with a lot of the research it's done and the evaluation it's done with, for example, the Gartner's Magic Quadrant, which evaluates a good number of companies in the various areas in which they operate. I'm wondering how you have dealt with the potential conflicts of interest in terms of dealing with some of those very vendors that the organization is evaluating.
I try very hard to essentially use Gartner the same way I used Gartner before I became part of Gartner, as a customer, any customer out there would. You know, we really, you know, there are many processes and Chinese walls built and put in place to make sure there's no conflict of interest and research is done in a very professional and proper due diligent way. So to me, you know, really there really is no conflict of interest whatsoever. I need to do what is best for Gartner. I obviously use Gartner, because I think it's a tremendous resource for me, and it helps me understand all of the factors that I ought to understand before making a decision. But at the end of the day, it's about looking at your business need, looking at the specifics of what your needs are, and then looking at the technologies to determine what makes most sense for you. And that I don't think will ever change. You shouldn't be buying a vendor or a product because somebody else tells you to. You should be buying it only if it really truly meets your needs. Where Gartner helps you is at least, you know, it makes it clearer as to what the strengths and the weaknesses are of different solutions and vendors out there. And then you have facts to sort of match up against your needs. And based on that, you make proper decisions. So, I don't think it's any different for me than it is really for any CIO out there.
Since Gartner's product is almost entirely information-based, it strikes me that your knowledge management needs are as complex as one might find anywhere. Therefore, I'm wondering how you, as the leader of Gartner's knowledge management initiatives, has thought through processes and tools that that guide knowledge management to ensure that knowledge that's developed, for instance, in one practice area is then accessible to other practice areas for which it might be useful.
I think the overall concept is probably not any different today than it ever was. Knowledge still needs to be captured, knowledge still needs to be managed, and knowledge still needs to be delivered. Separation of sort of functions, if you may, I think are fundamentally the same as they were many years ago. The difference is the technologies and the mechanisms by which all of those things happen, and so there's a whole bunch of different types of knowledge now that whether they're blogs or wikis or just multimedia or obviously still, text and text messaging, instant messaging, all kinds of interactions that happen that are knowledge, that that have value to other people. So things are more complicated technically. There are more of things that happen or different types of knowledge that need to be captured. But the fundamental process of capturing all of that, separate it from delivering it, separate from storing it, finding it, and all of that, I think still applies. As a matter of fact, even sort of the Web 2.0 world, where you can argue that knowledge presentation and knowledge creation are sort of happening at the same time, which is very true. They absolutely are. However, that interaction is captured and still needs to be stored because it can be reused and repurposed. And so, even there, there's overlap between creation and sort of publication processes. At the end of the day, you still want to make that available for repurposing and reuse subsequently. And so while fundamentals are still the same, technology, complexity, and volume is clearly going through the roof.
You mentioned earlier that one of the challenges that organizations are facing, in fact, is talent, with the war of talent, and you've mentioned in the past as well that this is something that is a key issue for CIOs to grapple with. And I'm wondering, as your organization is setting up shop in so many different places and has offices in many different continents and countries, how have you thought about the development or the redundancy of skills across those different areas versus the development, say, of centers of excellence or pockets of excellence that might emerge in one geography or another?
It's a key, I think, issue that every CIO and IT organization needs to address. I just don't feel that you have the luxury of being able to, you know, duplicate or replicate skills across areas. Because there's just too many skills and areas that you would have to do that with and just wouldn't be able to cover it all. And so you almost backed into the corner, in a sense, to be more service-oriented, in a sense, in developing centers of excellence or competency centers that you know, sort of, you know, view themselves as you know, service-oriented, in their knowledge and what they do, and they provide services in a specialized way on a global basis, and so rather than, you know, duplicating things on, you know, different parts of the globe, I find myself in everything that we do thinking globally. So if you provide whatever service you provide, you're providing really, you know, that service and not much else, but you're doing it on a global basis. So it's more about depth than sort of breadth of knowledge, because, you know, just the change that's happening and the amount of things you would need to know, I'm not sure there's a choice to do it any differently.
Darko Relic, thank you so much for being with us in the Forum on World Class IT.
You're very welcome.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. This forum has been created so that we might have a series of discussions with a variety of IT leaders to understand, evaluate, and define world-class performance as it relates to Meta Strategies' five principles of world-class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it's nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in a reactive mode, constantly fighting fires. If systems and hardware work reliably, on the other hand, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It's important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important, first and foremost, that the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and quality assurance, through to support and all the other aspects of the IT department, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business. If the three prior principles, namely people, infrastructure, and project and portfolio management, are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial aspect to corporations, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, or please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. Thank you.